The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Well, hello again, Dirtfish Rally friends. It's that time when we could spin the rally pod. Now, if you listened to our little chat last week, you'll know that time kind of ran away with myself, George Donaldson and David Evans. We were enjoying it so much, the discussion on the year that's more or less just passed, that we ran out of time. So it's a two-parter, this one. We discussed the 2023 season with regards to Toyota and I think Hyundai last week. This week, David's got the running order, but it's going to be, well, I was going to say equally chaotic. It wasn't really chaotic in the end last week, David Evans, was it?
It started out with the potential to be complete chaos, but somehow I think we just about got away with it. Yes. Just about.
I think your professionalism just pulled it right back in again.
But that's what it was, Colm. Exactly that.
It was 100%. As always, George Donaldson. George, it was a delight listening to your thoughts last week. Are you ready for this week?
Absolutely ready. I've got a cup of tea by my side, Colin. We've had minus 8.7 this weekend. Ooh. Here. It has actually, sadly, just gone above freezing now. It was a nice weekend, and I was very nearly stuck in a pub in Ambleside in the Lake District on a rally. Oh, yeah. But I didn't even get there because the weather was
heaven,
so bad,
wouldn't it?
Sadly. It would have been absolutely great, David. So my friends, their Mellors Elliott Motorsport, they were there. Should have been home on Saturday night. Did the rally, won it in an R5 Iris. There's a car that nobody really heard much about, but it's an R5 homologated car. And it beat all the Volkswagen.
Available in right-hand drive and left-hand
drive. Available in right and left-hand drive, exactly.
The
only one in the world, George, is that right?
There's quite a few of them. There's three or four of them being made.
The only one in the world that's available in right and left-hand drive.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, it is, Colin. It is. And it's very, very strong. It will be physically the strongest R5 car. And it'll also be the cheapest R5 car to run by far. But enough
so
of
Ollie,
my,
Ollie
enough
Miller's wondery.
He won. Handsomely.
He's a good driver, Ollie.
He's good, considering how
like
little
his dad.
Experience.
Better than his dad.
Yeah, better than his dad, absolutely.
This is a test to see if Chris Miller listens to Spin.
Yeah, I don't think he does. No, he's far too busy. He's far too busy always doing something fantastic. He's absolutely great fun. So I should have been with them for the weekend, but a combination of some small car problems and the impending weather forecast. I thought, well, I don't particularly want to be stuck. And they ended up spending two nights down there instead of one, and had a snowy night stuck in the pub. And there was 8 inches of snow sitting on the benches outside
right?
the pub they were in. Yeah, they sent photographs of it. It was proper.
So, George, was that the Grisdale?
The Grisdale stage is possibly the best rally in the world, Colin. It's an absolutely amazing little event. It is amazing. It used to consist of one big stage. I mean, they've done that in the past, but they can vary it from year to year. This year it was, I think, six stages, one on Friday night, five on Saturday. They ended up only they ran the one on Friday night. That was fine. And then Saturday, it only ran two stages.
Right.
That leads us
really nicely into the first thing that we want to talk about today. Mm. Because who else was doing the Grisdale stages?
Of note, I don't know.
That we might want to be talking about, George.
Malcolm Wilson? I have no idea.
Nearly. Matthew Wilson.
Rich Milner was doing it.
Rich Milner was doing it.
Tell me, how did he do?
How did he get on?
I don't know. I saw a picture of him.
I can tell.
Across the road, stuck on a road section with lots and lots of snow. Seb Scott, the ex-M Sport wonderful social media PR guy, was sitting next to him doing the co-driving. So it doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me that they were stuck on a road section, to be honest with you.
I've heard about Seb's navigating skills.
That's totally unfair.
That's outrageous.
I know, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. He was stuck in the snow, I think. But yeah, he was there in one of the M Sport Fiestas, little M Sport cars. He's not a bad driver either, Rich. Not a bad driver at all.
He's not.
As I try to extract myself from the situation I might have just put myself in.
And Seb's a very competent co-driver.
Oh, couldn't comment on that, David. Really couldn't comment on
that. Richard Milner, he appears to have finished, and he was third last. There you go.
So clearly it was quite a significant issue that they had.
It looks like you got a maximum on the last stage. On the second stage they did, that was the first one on Saturday. His time was actually quite good. If I look at his time was down in about the sort of 30th place mark.
Okay.
And I think there was a massive number of entries on that rally. I suspect
there always is, isn't there?
It's
a hugely popular event.
Yeah.
And it's not. It used to be part of Britain's Round of the World Championship, didn't it? There was Grisdale East and West. One of them was short, one of them was really long. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's right. There was
which way around?
I think it was the West one was the long one, but I could be completely wrong.
There we go. So reminiscing, boys. Well, let's reminisce then about the 2023 season for
N-Sport,
because let's go back to the start of the year. It was a year that potentially promised so much, wasn't it? The return of the prodigal son to M Sport, Oit Tanak, who, you know, was very much nurtured and raised in terms of his rallying upbringing by Malcolm Wilson, by M Sport. He returned, unexpectedly. Well, I don't think really anyone thought that, certainly 18 months ago, we weren't talking about Tanak leaving Hyundai, but he did. He took a big decision to leave there. He went to M Sport, knew there was work to do with that car, and difficult, a really difficult season for them, for M Sport and Tanak, David. What more can we say? Was it a little bit too hopeful, do you think? You know, the fact that the car they talked a lot about were working towards developing the car to Tanak's way of driving. You know, we all know that there are so few things you can change on these cars. You only have, three homologation jokers a year. Do you think it was maybe just a little bit too ambitious?
I don't know. At the time when they signed the deal, Cole, I mean, let's not forget that Oit hadn't driven the car a huge amount. Yes, he'd driven it, the thing, and he'd been, you know, Malcolm Wilson had been very, very clear with him that you come and drive the car and you only come and join us if you're happy. And you understand what we, you know, the position that we're in and the car that we've got. And of course, Oit did that, but he didn't get, you know, it wasn't an extensive test. He didn't run it on every surface. And it's difficult to make those judgment calls, isn't it, when you've got such limited information, if you like. And for me, which was the bigger surprise to kind of turn this one around? Was it a bigger surprise that he went to M Sport, or was it a bigger surprise that he left Hyundai? And in many ways, for me, it was a bigger surprise that he left Hyundai. Because clearly, as the season progressed last year, that car was getting better. But I think, you know, Oit is very much his own man. And he'd made his mind up and he wanted out of Hyundai. Ironically, he'll be back. He's dusting down those overalls as we speak, and he'll be putting those back on next year. It was a difficult, difficult year. And it's such a shame because everybody, you know, all of the romantics, like all three of us out there, we all wanted it to happen. We all wanted Tanak to go back and finish that job that he'd finished. You remember at the end of 17 when he left, he just won his first round of the championship and he was absolutely the golden boy coming out of Cockermouth. And it just didn't work out as everybody had hoped. Clearly there were, the car wasn't working the way that Oit wanted it to. Chris Williams, the technical director at M Sport, did absolutely everything he could to bring the car towards Oit. But they're a team with, like you say, Cole, the restrictions of jokers, of homologation jokers, and restrictions with budget. You know, they couldn't completely redesign the car, not by regulation and not by cost. So they did what they could. Danak took a couple of wins, and yeah, I think they probably got as much as they were going to get out of the season. But it's just a shame, you know. There was a bit of acrimony going on at times, and you just don't really need that, you know. They're a group of extremely hardworking people, and you count Tanak and Martin Yavioia in there as well. They all did all that they could, but by M Sport's own extremely kind of high standards, they're world champions. And that's what they wanted. That's what he was hired for. And that's why he joined M Sport, to win the world championship. So anything short of that has to be deemed a failure, doesn't it?
Yeah. 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 It was interesting watching the way that situation was dealt with by the team and by Tanak, in terms of this progress towards Tanak's driving style, progress towards adapting the car, developing the car, whatever. And it was very different. If you remember back 6 years, back to when Ogier joined the team, remember he was in a similar situation for the first three or four rallies, wasn't he? But I guess back then there were more variables that you could play with. There was a lot more leeway in terms of adapting the car, wasn't there? But Ogier's view, Ogier's way that he dealt with that was almost the polar opposite from Tanak's. Ogier put his arm around the team and said, yeah, I'm part of this team. You know, I know the restrictions we're facing, and he, you know, it's like different managers. The way that some managers are very hard, they're very difficult, they're very unforgiving. Other managers are very friendly. They put their arm around you and they know how to get the best out of you. With Tanak's approach and Ogier's approach in how they worked within that M Sport team were very, very different, and they delivered very different results. Is there anything in that, George, do you think? Or was it just down to the lack of flexibility with that car?
No, I think you've actually hit the nail right on the head, Colin. You know, rallying is all about nature and nurture, and it's there are undefined elements of driving that can pull magic out of a car. And Seb Ogier did that a couple of years ago when he was at M Sport, and it was fabulous. It was a great year to watch. It was a great year for M Sport, and they worked hard and they delivered. And honestly, this year should have been exactly the same. I don't think it was exactly the same. I think the team had a few technical issues that they had managed to avoid with Seb Ogier, categorically. I think that's a fair comment to say. But Seb certainly didn't seem to nurture the team or appreciate the team or accept the circumstance publicly. Maybe he did privately, and we're just seeing a couple of public comments.
You mean Oit, George? You mean Oit?
Oit, sorry. Who did I say?
Seb.
Sorry, Oit. He didn't seem to accept it in the same way that Seb did, and. Like I say, that might just be the perception we've got. So I don't really want to be unfair to Oit here at all, but it looked honestly like he wasn't being as realistic or as fair as he should have been. And that just brings me back to another point. You know, rather than labour on about that, Oit's made some pretty poor career choices over the years, hasn't he, really? I mean, you know, leaving Toyota, not smart. Staying at Hyundai for as long as he did, okay, I think that was what he had to do. Leaving them to go to M Sport, well, for him, it wasn't smart. He's gone back to them. Let's hope that is smart. Let's hope that does yield a result. Would I say he should have stayed at Ford another year? I would have suggested that, you know, play the long game and do that, because I felt that team would, you know, everything that M Sport have done is always credible and worked. The reliability issues, I believe that they had sorted through a lot of them, and the car was getting better and better, more and more reliable. So, yeah, disappointed he's left, I'll be honest. I'm not sure it's the smartest decision to leave, because he's going back into a team that has just reformed itself. They will be quite determined to do the right thing, and I could see a serious rub happening inside that team unless it's managed very, very carefully. So, yeah, we'll see if it was a smart decision or not. But personally, you know, he'd made the jump. He's a fantastic driver. He can go anywhere where the opportunity exists. And, he, you know, even at the end of next year, it's not like his career is going to be over. I would have stuck M Sport for another year. I'm sorry, I would have done.
Yeah, no, I'd go along with that. Absolutely. You've put the work in and you've laid the foundations, haven't you, again this year.
So here's a question for you boys. Here's a question for you. So if Tanak had known about Robin Perra's decision before he signed the deal with Hyundai, if he'd known that Robin Perra would not be a challenger next year, do you think he might have stayed at Ford? Do you think that may have been enough for him to say, actually, it's better off having the absolute 100% of a lesser resource behind me rather than 50% of a bigger resource behind me? It have changed his decision?
You would imagine that it would certainly be a factor. If I was his manager, I would certainly be factoring that in for him, yeah? I mean, I think, you know, we're yeah. I mean, every single one of our listeners is effectively the same as us. They're all thinking the same way we are, considering planning out the concept. I think we would all be advising, it's got to be at least a 50-50 consideration to stay at M Sport. You know, the car has come really rather good at the end of the year. You've been quite competitive everywhere. You can certainly garner championship points. You know, you can probably just about get a podium on every event now, very close to it. And you can probably, in broad terms, you can potentially win 6 or 7 rallies next year. That's a pretty good batting average. I would say that's a world championship year.
I'd agree with you. Yeah. What do you think, David?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. Yeah. It's remarkable. And maybe this is the end of this pod. We've all agreed. I think that could be a first.
Is that end of year weariness setting in? What is that? That's bizarre, isn't it?
there's no doubt that there is something in a Tanak and M Sport relationship. But equally, I think it would have been very difficult to actually physically see him staying again this year. You know, obviously having a world champion like Oik Tanak brings a sort of financial burden to the team, doesn't it? And you know, your next question really kind of has to be, Col, about where do they go now and what do they do? You know, Tanak was the big hope in much the same way that Ogier was in 17. And 17, he totally... Ogier delivered. You know, that was a year that...
Hang on a second, David. Sorry. So I'm going to interrupt you. So I do apologise because I said I wouldn't interrupt anyone. But you said that puts a financial burden on M Sport. M Sport, they didn't make a bad decision this year. They made the right decision. They took Oik Tanak on. They were prepared to take that financial burden on. They were going to take that on and they were going to do everything they could. I didn't see Oik missing any particular... I think he maybe missed one test that everyone else maybe got. I'm not quite sure. But he probably got about as much testing as everybody else did. And the car got probably more development in some ways than some of the other teams. But that wasn't to develop the car to make it better. That was to make the car suitable for Oik. Right. I think that team was quite happy and would have been very, very... Well, not that anybody's content to hemorrhage money away, but M Sport, let's be honest, they're as enthusiastic about motorsport as we are, and they're prepared to make that investment in their future by spending a crap load of money on a world rally car and making it a world champion for at least a driver. So I don't think they had any problem with the money aspect. I think they could spend the money they needed to. That wasn't an issue. It might have been painful, but they were going to do it. So that wasn't an issue at all. I think M Sport
were well prepared. The question was that they don't... I'm not sure they have the money, George. You know, this is the issue, isn't it? That the current model it dictates that they're not really selling cars. And like Malcolm said time and again, you know, you go back to the mid-teens or whatever, and they were selling 10, 14, 15 world rally cars a year. And that was funding the WRC program. They're simply not. This year, they've sold one car to Jordan Sotiridis, and they're selling more Rally 2 cars, and I'm sure they will sell even more Rally 2 cars off the back of Adrian Formeau's incredible season and the fact that all of the work they've done to that car, it's put it right back at the sharp end of Rally 2 pace. So they're selling a few of those, they're selling Rally 3 cars, but the cost of those Rally 3 cars, there's not the big margin in the way that, or the potential for margin in the way that there is in a Rally 1 car. And that's the problem, is that it's not, as Malcolm said time and again, the budget's not there. And this is why, for some, for many, we need this potential for regulation change. It's a drum that he's banged consistently. When he signed up for hybrid at the start of 2022, he did so on the back of knowing and given assurances that he would be able to sell these cars. Well, you can't. And, the best bet at the minute is to whip out the hybrid and sell them to use in national championships. And the issue with trying to use one of these hybrid cars in a national championship is you've got to pay for FIA infrastructure to come and make sure that that car's run in conformity with e-regulations or whatever they are, which is absolutely right, but it's prohibitive, both for the event organisers and for the privateers. So I think there's a lot of noise about change, I do think that potentially change is in the air right now.
Well, I hope it is. I really do. But you know what? But just as you were explaining that, David, and you're 100% right. Rally organisers don't actually want to see these hybrid cars because it is, it's work and it's cost for them. Mm. But it did. The image that popped into my mind there, I went back 120 years to when the first cars appeared on the roads, and it's the man running in front of the car with a red flag warning people there's a car coming. Do you know what I mean? If we make these cars, these hybrid cars, to run in rallies on public roads, then we should trust that they're safe. Why do we have to have all of this extra cost, all of this extra burden on teams, on privateers, on drivers, rallies, to accommodate electric cars or hybrid cars? I think it's nuts. I think it's completely nuts. I can see Malcolm's frustration at it all.
All rallying, one source. By now, you know that dirtfish.com is the place to go for all of your rallying news. But when it's time to try your hand behind the wheel, just join us here at Dirtfish Rally School, nestled in the Cascade Mountains in Snoqualmie, Washington. Whether you're a pro seeking extra seat time or a novice looking to get started, we've got programs tailored to all rallying needs. And when you want to watch the best in the world, just head over to our YouTube channel. Our coverage of the WRC and American rallying is second to none. Follow us at Dirtfish Rally across all social media platforms and shop the latest looks in our merchandise store now. As always, rally on.
We're in a World Council week. Let's see what comes out of there.
That's a bit exciting. I shall be following Dirtfish's pages with rapt enthusiasm. I always do, but even more so because
I should hope you do, George.
I'm quite excited. Could we see a sort of 1986 sort of change happening, where they just say that's it, no more hybrid world rally cars, Rally 2 next year from Monte Carlo. Ouch.
In fairness, everybody's talked about this a lot, and as I say, you don't walk far through the service park before you get somebody banging that drum of, just make it Rally 2, put big wings on it, put a bigger restrictor on it and all of that. And there's an engineering side that you think,
David.
It's very straightforward. Let's just get on with it. But yeah, I think it's something has to change. We've got change coming at the end of, hang on a sec, 22, 23, 24, 25, at the end of 2026. Apologies.
David using his fingers there.
100%. It's a 5-year homologation cycle. So we've got these cars till the end of 26. So let's see. But like you said, George, there's they thought they got Group B for how long? And old Jean-Marie Balestre came in and said, no!
That was it. Stopped it dead. Yeah.
Overnight, I actually banged the desk then.
And it was a smart decision. It was a horrible decision at the time, but it was smart, and it put rally into. And I was involved at that point. That was my first, my second year in the sport, working with Toyota. And wow. You know, we had a Group S car. We were on our third iteration of the MR2. We'd had various, and we'd gone longitudinal, and that car arrived in Cologne. Two or three days after the decision was to ban Group B, it was turning into Group S, which was the same thing.
Yeah, Group B to Group S in 87, wasn't it? Excuse me. Just to go back to my original question, where now for M Sport?
Where now? It's a difficult one to answer. Look, we're going to have to get a Monte Carlo lineup very, very shortly, aren't we? In terms of their drivers, it's got to be another year of consolidation for them, and it's exactly what they don't need. They don't need another year of consolidation. We've seen this so many times in the past, but what we have also seen is that these consolidating years for M Sport offer the opportunity to young drivers. And you could argue that both Elvin Evans and Oit Tanak and others have benefited from those seasons where there wasn't really an out-and-out number one driver, although in the last years for Tanak and Evans, obviously Ogier was there. It is Adrian Formeau, I suspect, who is going to be the one that benefits from it. Who knows what Formeau can do next year? Who knows what he can do? Who knows how much progress? Because we didn't, unfortunately, see anything of him in Japan. Is he capable? What's he capable of doing? Who knows? Can he win rallies? I'm not sure. Can he win a championship? Well, next year's championship, he might be able to win without winning rallies, because you're going to have Ogier winning rallies and disturbing the equilibrium. You're going to have Robin Perra winning rallies, disturbing the equilibrium. And you might have Lappi winning rallies and disturbing the equilibrium. So it is possible, probably for the first time in many years, that a driver who can consistently score points and maybe even not win a rally in the season could win the title next year. Could win the title.
It's bizarre.
Could that be? No, but it's right, isn't it, George?
It absolutely is. But there's the whole M Sport situation is a massive opportunity for any of the drivers that have come up, started to establish, and then fallen back a ways. Let's take a look. Andreas Mikkelsen. This represents a massive opportunity for him. Already a proven rally winner, he's shown a great deal of maturity this last year, in my view. This year was a great year for him, where he really delivered something pretty special, I think. I know we've got young Oliver Solberg there, he's another up-and-coming, slightly different story. To be honest, I would even talk about Hayden Padden. There's another one. If Hayden could just take his career more seriously as a driver rather than as a manufacturer representative. He's taken the business view. The business view for him is stick with Hyundai. He's got a very, very nice thing going. But if he could go and do world rallies in an M Sport car, he's never driven for M Sport, as far as I know.
He had one lined up in Finland where he crashed didn't he? Did he have another one?
Is that the one where he crashed it in Shakedown or in Test?
The rock came out, didn't it? He pulled the rock out himself and then hit it on the return run.
And these guys are proven rally winners that could get into that M Sport car. Honestly speaking, how many wins was there potentially for Ott this year? I think there was possibly five or maybe six potential wins. A few of them where the car kind of let him down a little bit. He had a few problems. Now, let's assume that M Sport have ironed those issues out. If they can't change the car to suit Oit, they can sure change the car to make it super reliable, like the Toyotas and the Hyundais for the most part. And I believe they've done that. So if you put a driver in that car is capable of winning. For goodness sakes, we're looking at a golden opportunity. There's never been an opportunity like this for a number of young drivers. It's an unbelievably exciting year for M Sport. I am so excited for them. They're going to have a brilliant time. I hope that all these guys can figure it out and find the budget. That's a trick, because they are going to have to pay for it.
It's difficult to... Sorry,
go on, David. Sorry. No, go on, mate.
No, just, you know, when you talk about Formo potentially winning rallies and stuff, it's a huge burden to put on somebody's shoulders like that, isn't it?
You know,
he wants to come in and he wants to just take his time and build up that experience that he was starting to build through last season. But at the same time, there is pressure there to demonstrate that the car can do it, the car can still win. So it's really kind of such a juxtaposition, that of a driver coming and wanting to rebuild his career. And for me, you know, I do think there is something with Formo. I think he's a driver that has the natural ability, whatever natural ability is, the raw speed, he's got it. But it is going to be difficult for him to be given that kind of comfortable position in M Sport to just do that next year, when they're desperate to show the car's got pace and the car can win. Unless they totally take a completely pragmatic approach and just say, look, do it. Just go and just do your season. Take your time. Top fives, top sixes. That'll do for us. And let's take a longer term view on this. But, you know, the meter's David, running all the time.
David,
sorry.
That's futile desperation. You're desperate to show the car can win. Who is there? Who is there that's available if they're desperate to show the car can win? Who'd you put in it?
Mikkelsen or Solberg?
Solberg's the only one. Forget Mikkelsen. Mikkelsen is, you know, is not an option, in my view. Not an option at all.
Well, do you think he's a strike force, do you call him?
Well, I'll tell you exactly why. Because we talked about Markham's business model. You know, an integral part of Markham's business model over the past two decades has been investing in young talent. And then making money from that talent. And we saw that when Nouvelle moved on to Hyundai. You know, on a big bucks move. Who benefited from that? Malcolm, for a number of years. Same with Tanak, same with Elfyn Evans. You know, it's all part of it. If you're going to do a deal to get these kids or anyone into the car, you do a deal and you weigh up all the factors that might allow you some sort of payback at some point in the future. Mikkelsen isn't a future prospect. You know, he isn't going to get a three-year multi-million dollar deal with Toyota. It's not going to happen, nor is sadly Hayden Paddon. You know, it's not going to happen. Solberg, on the other hand, will get a multi-million dollar deal somewhere at some point in the future. Formo has the potential to demand a multi-million dollar deal at some point in the future. And don't forget, you know, Toyota might well be looking for another full-time driver at some point in the next year or two. You know, and so might Hyundai. So I think Malcolm's decision, much as he might be desperate, as you say, David, to show that the car can still win, he has to be a bit pragmatic about it and say, okay, so, you know, yeah, we can put Mikkelsen in, yeah, we can put Paddon in, but there's no long-term future in that. The long-term future is to, in some ways, part subsidise a Oliver Solberg, an Adrian Formeau, maybe even a Pierre-Louis Loubet, who knows? You know, part subsidise and potentially get a return from him in the future and say, well, if we get any wins this year, we get them. But ultimately, for us, winning is developing these young drivers, giving them consistency, showing that, yeah, they can win rallies. And for me, it's Solberg. Solberg is the obvious one. But I think if you wanted to take a gamble, you would gamble a little bit on Formo. Formo, for me, as you say, he's got the talent, he's got the skill. Formo's temperament, to me, has always been a little bit of his weakness, you know, he is a little bit cocky. He's a little bit, at times, I hate to use the word, but he is a little arrogant at times, Adrian Formo. And that's good. That's good that he's got his own, you know, his own character. And we've seen less of that this year, though, I think. We have. I've seen an awful lot less of that this year. And so he is learning. But for me, Formo, if he can get that side of it right, the mental side right, the mental approach right, Formo is a rally winner, no question. But for me, if you're talking about someone who can deliver everything that M Sport needs next year, there's only one driver, and it has to be Solberg.
Yeah.
Well, I think you make a lovely point there, Colin. Great argument. I mean, hard to come against it, but here I go. Okay, Malcolm's made, you know, lots of money out of drivers, you know, investing in drivers and then effectively getting a payback. I would suggest that his payback has probably not been his motivation. But we know that M Sport is a commercial operation categorically, but I don't think it's all about money for Malcolm. If it was all about money for Malcolm, he would have stopped 2 years ago. He wouldn't have bothered going with the World Rally Car. He's more passionate about our sport than that. he's as passionate as we are. I mean, if we were
Rally One Car, George, sitting, sorry.
Rally One Car, yes, yeah, sorry. He would have called it quits with the hybrid. He wouldn't have done it because it was, well, it was a very poor misjudgment if he actually thought he was going to make money out of that. It turns out not that it was necessarily a judgment call. It's just the way that it's transpired. So in my view, it's not about the investment and the money. It's about winning for Malcolm, and it's you know, if he wins, drivers will come to him and people will buy his cars and he'll make money and business will go on and he'll employ people, and he cares about that. So I believe, I've never worked for Malcolm, but he's, you know, when you speak to him, he seems to care about everybody and wants to look after them to a greater extent, I'd like to think. So giving him the benefit of that doubt, if there is any doubt at all, I say that he should take Mickelson, or I mean, Mickelson should find the money. If Mickelson's serious about his career, this could reignite it. And I think he should. And I think Hayden Paddon could consider the same.
For me, I think Paddon's too, he's too wedded to Hyundai. Yeah, isn't he? I mean, he says he's not, but, you know, Hyundai New Zealand.
This represents, there is an opportunity for any one of those drivers, given that they find the budget, to get into a Ford World Rally car this year. That's going to be
Rally One car.
Rally One car. They will call it silly names, won't they? Let's call it a Group 4 rally car to hark back to the 80s, the very early 80s as well. To drive a winning car, on a car that can probably win on every single gravel and snow rally of the year, and potentially show, you've got a Monte Carlo you can fling in there that certainly it can win. Heck, you can win that with a Rally 2 car in the right year. So certainly that M Sport car is more than enough. The team is sitting there poised to put all their weight behind you. It's a fabulous, fabulous opportunity. And you know, I would love to go and be their sporting director in Monte Carlo Rally and with their drivers, and then put all the weight of, well, I'm sure they've got it themselves. It's such an interesting event to manage and bring all the little extras in that you can do. That's the fun thing to do on Monte Carlo, and it wins you the event. To do that and go out and win a Monte Carlo rally, yes, that would be the fairy tale for me. And I would love to see M Sport. There's my passion, guys. There's my passion. I think they can do it. Yes, Colin, I understand that financial model, but I think there's more to it than that. There's a passion I think the thing to do is, you know, there's an Esa Pekka there. Okay, he's got a drive. I'm not sure about all the other drivers, but for me, Mickelson is a standout there. So, there's a few others.
I'm going to chuck a couple of others in for you boys to discuss. So we have talked about, you know, the renaissance, the second coming of Tanak after he went and disappeared off for best part 2.5 years. Elvin Evans, when he was doing the British Rally Championship, when he was doing, you know, the R5 car in the World Rally Championship, came back brilliantly to win rallies. Who else is in the picture in that regard? Well, I'll tell you who else is in the picture. In that regard, Gus Greensmith, he's got a number of positive attributes when it comes to M Sport. One is potentially the financial backing. You know, he's got the money if he needed to find part of the budget or make a contribution towards it. He's got the experience in the Rally One car, and he's got now a year in the Rally Two car behind him. And he's learned again to compete at a high level and to compete to win rallies. So he's one that I think will feature. He's made noises about staying with Skoda and Rally 2 next year. I am pretty certain Greensmith will feature next year in M Sport's lineup. The other one that I think is almost an absolute given is Munster. Munster will be there next year. He'll do, I suspect, a split program between Rally 2 and Rally 1 cars. But for me, the interesting one is Greensmith. You know, how much better might Greensmith be, do you think, David, after his year in the Rally 2 car?
Undoubtedly, it's going to help, Cole. It sharpens the knife, doesn't it? Competition, being absolutely in the middle of competition at that level, which, let's be honest, Gus wasn't trading tenths of seconds with the likes of Sebastian Ogier and Thierry Neuville, but he absolutely was in Rally 2, in WRC 2, and... For me, it does bring you on as a driver. We've seen it time and again, like you said, you know, Elvin and all of that. So, yeah, I think Gus is absolutely somebody who would come back from a WRC2 program stronger. And I think he could definitely do a job for M Sport. And ultimately, it would be nice to see him back there as well. You know, he's a good guy, you know, Gus. I know that there are people who seem to kind of like to knock him, but, you know, that's part and parcel of the modern world, isn't it? But for me, you know, he's somebody, as I say, who could do a job. And it would be interesting to see that progression.
Yes, it would. It really would. Because that's the whole point with rally, is that it's blind to resources, blind to background. Gus Greensmith is a young lad that who happens to have had a bit of family money behind him. He loves the sport. I mean, this is not a comfortable sport to do. We all love it with a passion. But let me tell you, at that pointy end, there's not a great deal of comfort involved in it. There's 18 to 20-hour days over the course of the rally, and then you're driving this rally car on the knife edge. It ain't a lot of fun. It's not like club rallying. It's hard work. And he's prepared to do that, and he's prepared to muscle down and do that. Yes, another driver that could come good. But, Colin, I know you're convinced that Oliver Solberg can come good. Sadly, that I think it's unbelievably difficult to predict that a driver will actually make it to the very top. Oliver's not had a chance to really show that. He had that one year in the was it a Rally 1 car or was it a World Rally car? I never quite understand. He had his one year in the
Rally 1.
It was a Rally 1 car at that point as well, was it? He's had that one year, which wasn't a great year, and I don't believe that was down to him to a greater extent. I think it was down to the team at that point. But you know, he could come good. But Andreas Mikkelsen, we know, has won rallies. Hayden Padden, we know, has won rallies. These guys can do it, and they can knuckle down and do it. There's a few more in there, as you said, you know, Luby, Formo. You know, in a strange way, Formo's accident in Japan rally will knock that last little bit of hubris out of him if he still had any in him from his previous years, because obviously he was going out there to get a result. Probably wasn't going like an absolute madman on that stage, but still got caught out, you know, as did Danny Sordo and obviously Takamoto Katsuta also got caught out. He managed to survive. So in reality, that's done him good. But those guys, they can all come good. But only, you know, Adrian Formo is a maybe. Honestly speaking, Oliver Solberg is a maybe.
Do you really think Oliver's a maybe, George?
Well, not really. I have great belief that he can do it, but until he does, he's a maybe. I mean, you know, I'm just looking at the pure practicality. It looks to me like, you know, if I had to put a pound to a penny, I would say he's going to succeed. He's got the backing. I know they've got a good pragmatic approach. The opportunities aren't looking great at the moment. The only opportunity he's got is M Sport right now to progress.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to make that leap. So I mean,
M Sport and money, George.
Yeah,
M-Sport and money.
Absolutely. You know? So that's always been the way with motorsport. It's never been any different. So he's going to have to find the backing and make that happen. You know, maybe if Malcolm feels the same way we do about it, maybe he'll go into that financial model that you talked about, Colin, and M-Sport will take a leap on him and give him a great deal and help him on his way. But what Oliver needs is the better part of a full year. You know, maybe the way that model will work for M Sport is that he won't get a full year, but maybe he'll get all the gravel rounds, something like that, and maybe just one asphalt.
Yeah.
Because they'll cycle it between other drivers that can finance it, but that makes it a super interesting year for M Sport. So yes, whilst we feel like it's a terrible state of flux for M Sport right now, there is an incredible opportunity to do something phenomenally interesting. And if there's enough weight behind it, enough commitment behind it from the drivers, I'm convinced that M Sport will have it. But M Sport will have to be the driving force in making sure that the right options are taken to develop these drivers and to give them the opportunity. So I would like to see Oliver Solberg, Andreas Mikkelsen, honestly speaking, obviously Adrian Formeau in as many events as we can, and maybe Greg Warminster as well. Yeah, there's four drivers.
Munster's impressed me.
Yeah,
I've got to say, yeah, Munster has been, he's been impressive this year.
Yeah,
I think that's a good call. Mm-hmm.
Johan Rossell as well, another one that I think.
Rossell, I love the look of Rossell, and I'm absolutely astonished that others aren't looking at him.
Yeah.
He's developed as a driver massively over the past 18 months, 2 years, and he's always been a good driver.
So between but he's developed for me. And Gus then, Colin, there's a fabulous suite of drivers
available. Well, let's give our three then. You've given your three, George. I reckon there'll be three, maybe four drivers in that M Sport Rally 1 car this year. I don't think Solberg will be there, sadly. I would like to see him there. I don't think he'll be there. I think there are too many hurdles, too many obstacles to overcome for Solberg to be driving in an M Sport car next year. So I don't think he'll be there.
Big shame. A big shame.
A big shame. Yeah. But I don't think it'll happen. So I think next year we'll have Greensmith there. I think we'll have Formeau there. And I think we'll have Munster there. And there may be one or two surprise drivers. But I think
what
those three... I think it's between Loubet. I don't think you can run Loubet and I don't know. I just don't know where the money comes from, David. But I think there has to be... Red Bull France must be paying something. You know, would they be paying for two drivers? I don't know. Are the French Federation making a contribution towards a French driver in a Rally 1 car? We've never got to the bottom of that, but we suspect that certainly a few years ago there was a bit of contribution from the French Federation. Would they be prepared to back two drivers? I don't think so. I think you've got to put your money as a federation between one young talent, and that's always been the way with the French Federation. They have backed one driver, and that's been it. So I don't see, sadly, you know, a situation where Formeau and Loubet, and unless Loubet comes with the full budget and says, give me a car, I'm buying a car for the year. If he does that, then yeah, every chance Loubet will be there. But more realistically, I do believe that Greensmith has got a chance because he can bring part budget. Formeau can potentially bring budget with him. He's got a very good chance. And Munster, quite clearly, has got the backing of Serdaridis and Serdaridis' car. So he's got a real chance. So those three would be my three for the year.
I'm Kellen Koschel, and I just did my first Dirtfish course, which was the one-day women's course. My biggest surprise was how calm it could be in the car, and the calmer I was, the faster I could make the car go. The surprising thing about driving was that it wasn't necessarily a mental thing. I had to really get out of my head and into my body more, and I just felt a little more comfortable doing that for the first time around a group of women. But I will say, I do feel like I could do any of the Dirtfish courses now. I kind of know what to expect, and you know, hopefully more women get into motorsports, and then any day could be an all-women's day if just enough of us are in the sport. If I were talking to someone who was thinking about taking a class but was kind of on the fence, it would be, you know, what are you waiting for? It's such a fun experience. You're going to really learn something, and you're going to push your limits, and maybe you'll even have some more confidence.
You've got to look at Munster. Well, you remember last year in Japan, Cole, when we were sitting there watching him trying to warm up, and he was basically just running on the spot a little bit, and you know he wasn't putting the times in. He didn't look a super motivated driver, nope. And you very quickly sort of overlooked him, and for me that's totally turned around this year. The fact that he's gone and he's done JWRC, and he won around there, and then he went back to Rally 2, and he showed some real promise there, obviously, in Japan. And he showed genuine promise in Rally 1 as well.
Japan, Mickelson was enormously uncomfortable, shall we say, by the pace that Munster showed, because Mickelson thought, I'm just going to tootle around here and I'm going to win this one. Didn't have to, but he thought, you know, that was his assumption. Munster turned up, started setting some good times, and Mickelson had to drive very well to stay ahead of Munster. And that shows you how much progress he's made. And that was always his stated intention, wasn't it, with those outings in the Rally 1 car, to give him more confidence, more ability to go quick in the Rally 2. And yeah, I agree. You forget he's only 24 as well, Munster. 23, 24, I think. These are the sort of ages that... Okay, take the Robin Perra thing out of the equation. That just completely skews it when we talk about young drivers and where they need to be. But 23, 24 years old is a good age to be saying, yep, I can see the potential there and I'm going to invest in that bit of potential. So, yeah, I don't know. It's, when do we find out, David? When are we going to find out about the M Sport lineup?
I think entries from Monty are in at the end of... I don't think it's the end of this week. I think it's probably the end of next week. I will check.
It's usually the sort of middle of the month, you know, the early part of the middle of the month, end of the second week-ish, 12th, yeah. 13th, something like that.
Do they start testing before that? Do they start testing before the end of next week?
No. Don't forget, testing is mainly next year because they've used their days, haven't they, for this year?
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Of course.
I'm thinking back to the old days. You'd be out testing for Monte Carlo now.
In fairness, George, you wouldn't be on the pod now because you would be running up Col de Blaine or somewhere like that, wouldn't you?
We'd be doing all those good, fun things, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So much snow in the Alps just now as well. So much snow.
Let's hope it sticks this year.
Boys, so I think we had about four items on the agenda for this evening on David's loose plan. We've gone 48 minutes and we've just more or less got through one of those items.
Yes, we may
success
need to,
once again.
We may need to just... Well, let's just whiz very quickly through WRC2. And sorry for taking your job on here, Cole, but I've got approximately 8 minutes before I've got to go. Did the right man win the championship?
I hate that sort of question. Genuinely. What defines the right man?
I don't ask me to extrapolate the question, just answer it.
Well, clearly. I mean, he did better than anyone. Now, I know your issue, David. I know your issue, and I agree entirely.
No, I have no issue. For me...
No. You've documented it. So I'm going to talk about your issue with WRC2. The way that drivers can effectively choose rallies where they have a far better chance of taking maximum points. So a well-funded driver can choose to go to Africa and drive at, you know, 70-80% and still win. The same, they can go to Japan, they can go to Chile, a well-funded driver. And in that circumstance, you might say that under a certain set of circumstances, maybe the best driver hasn't won the championship. But I think Mikkelsen has been the best driver this year. He's been the most consistent, you know. Yeah. He had a lot of pressure. He's been the quickest.
What he did in Greece was outrageous. Yeah. It was not consistently the quickest because Solberg has won more stages. But you've got to hand it to what Andreas did in Greece. That was something special.
Oh, phenomenal.
To come back from nowhere to win. It's rare these days, Cole, that you get to the end of an event and you see absolute sheer unbridled joy on the face of a crew. And those boys, when they got out of the car, when we saw them for the first time, you know, the emotion was unbelievable. It was fantastic. It's what our sport's about.
It was. And in that regard, he probably was the best driver. I would add to that the fact that he was under pressure in those first two events. You know, and it doesn't matter how experienced you are. You know, he's a driver who's won rallies at the very highest level, driven for factory teams. He still felt that pressure. And where was it? I think it was Portugal and Sardinia, wasn't it? Where he had to deliver those results to get the backing for the rest of the season. And for me, he was the best driver, and he drove all round better than anyone else. Not just with his pace, but with his consistency, his intelligence. And everything else. So, he was good. So, for me, the best driver did win. George?
Absolutely. Andreas did a phenomenally accomplished job and nobody managed to counter him. And people made mistakes around him as well, which played into his hands. But that was because of his experience that he avoided them. You know, it's not that other people made silly mistakes. They made mistakes in sometimes very, very tough circumstances. He was the one that, when he made a mistake, like he managed to survive. You know, his Central European one was a classic example of that. You know, he managed to survive that.
I've got to say, chaps, I've been quite distracted throughout this entire podcast. So I've been multitasking. I did send George a picture, Colt. You were a wee bit late, so you missed the treat, but you can actually log on to dirtfish.com any second now and see the Toyota's GR Yaris Rally 2 is testing in the French Alps. And this is the car. This is now kind of the rally-ready car. It's homologation week. The inspection's coming. So there's obviously a story about exactly what the car's up to. So I've been building that story as we've been making the podcast. So very, very exciting.
Are these snowy pictures?
A little bit of snow. Actually, Cole, there's probably more snow, or there was certainly yesterday morning, I'd say, probably more snow on your lovely farm where you live. There was huge. Have you spoken to the children?
Yeah, apparently there was. I would like to say something loads of snow. But, yeah, there was a lot.
Yesterday morning, we woke up here, and we're a wee bit westy from you, but it was unbelievable. This morning, pouring with rain, and all the snow's gone. Very disappointing. But yeah, so, excuse me, good Lord. Stay tuned to Dirtfish.com. It is a big week for as we're talking about WRC2, that GI Yaris Rally 2 is basically in the final throws of being homologated, ready in time for next week. It is doing an event as a zero car this week. Ooh. And I can't pronounce it. It's the Rally du Pont or something like this. Somewhere in France, obviously.
Right.
Don't ask
me
to say that again.
Who's driving?
Yeah, don't ask me to answer that question either, okay. George. Please read the brief. It's a I'm not entirely sure. But interesting one. Guess who's driving today? And I will bet pretty much my house that you won't get it right who's driving it today.
Yeah, I will. I'll guess. It was Juha Kankkonen.
Wrong.
I'd have to just say Juho Hanninen because he seems to have been the test.
Wrong.
No, Stefan, I'll tell you who's going to be. It is. Yes, it is. It is that guy. It is him.
Stefan
Lefebvre.
Yeah, I got that too. Colin.
So apparently okay, Lefebvre is he's in as a potential customer.
Okay, great. That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. So, and then there was something else that I interrupted Colin to tell you, and I can't remember what it was now. Normally I write things down on my little notepad here, and I've totally forgotten to do that. But what I do have to say is that I might have to jump off now, chaps.
Yeah.
And disappear. But it's been an absolute joy. I can't believe that's another hour gone.
It is.
It's another hour. George, I think we'll probably wrap it up as well there, David, because, you know, much as George and I have lots to talk about, it's not really a spin the rally pod without you, David Evans.
Shush, I've remembered the other thing. It's come back to me. Guess what I'm doing today? You won't guess. You'll just simply never guess.
Make us
so I'm going to guess.
You're driving a train.
Exactly. No, that. Exactly.
You're preparing your pace notes because you are going to be doing the Monte Carlo rally as a co-driver.
No, I'm not even going to go down that road. 20 years ago, everybody remembers Rally GB as where Petter Solberg won his first world championship, first and only world. Actually, not his first and only, because he did win some world rallycross championships. What people forget, 20 years ago, there was a much bigger story, almost as big a story, in Neil Burgess and Jim Holder doing Rally GB in a mini.
That's correct.
So Elliot and I going down to film Noddy and Neil Burgess. Neil Burgess driver, Jim Noddy Holder as a co-driver. We're going to film them and talk to them and relive some of those golden memories from 20 years ago. So that's where I'm off to, boys. So I will love you and leave you.
Have a great day. Have a
safe
great day.
Journey, David. Fantastic. Safe journey. And we look forward to seeing that very much, that video. I'm sure it'll be an absolute cracker. George, you've got memories of minis in the World Rally Championship.
Certainly have. I did two World Championship rallies in a mini, the Swedish rally in 1983 and 84. I did the Swedish rally. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And we finished both times. We rolled the second year. How we ever finished the first year, I've no idea, because we literally had no tyres. It wasn't much better in the second year either, because we couldn't keep
studs
in the tyres.
Here's a question for you, George. A question for you before we wrap up, because we are almost approaching the hour mark. So when we were in Japan, we're on a road section. You might have seen this little video. I may post it elsewhere just so you can see it. But we were driving on a road section, and on the left-hand side of the road, there
the
was
minis,
a...
Yes. Yeah,
did you see it?
Place. Yeah, I did. I watched that whole
video. It wasn't a heritage mini place. It was just a workshop.
Yeah, it was a guy.
And it looked like a whole load of... minis in a very, and these are the old minis. We're talking about the proper style minis, the Monte Carlo type mini.
There was a great collection of them.
There were loads of them, and then there was this what looked like a mini on steroids. And eventually, the guy comes out, and he spoke very little English. But he said it came out of the UK, this car. It was a factory-made car. And it was, he opened the bonnet, George, and there wasn't a millimetre of space. They put some turbo in it, and there was huge wings on it, huge side skirts on it. It was like a Mini on steroids. What? He gave it a name, a BM something.
I think it didn't come out of the factory as that. It would have been one of the, you know, there was various companies that had strong associations with the, God, I can't even remember the name of them, but there was what would you call them, preparation houses. They were aftermarket, you know, very well established companies that did very beautiful, very bespoke Minis. I remember, was there not one where you bought an Aston Martin or something and you got a Mini or something? There was odd things that went on like that, and there was beautiful cars made, very bespoke. Well, And you know, Minis have been tuned since forever, and you could get all sorts of lovely parts of them, so it was a relatively easy thing to do. The styling of them was amazing. Some of those preparation, or I don't know what you would call them, aftermarket preparation companies, and they did beautiful cars, and they did production runs of them, like 100 and things like that, or 50.
Right. I mean, this thing looked like a homologation special. If there was a Mini homologation special, that was it.
It wasn't. It was just a road car, but gorgeous.
Got you.
Yeah.
Well, I've never seen one in the UK. What I'll try and do is see whether I can get that video put up onto Facebook. So keep an eye out for our Facebook page. If you haven't already subscribed or liked our Facebook page to get the notifications of when we post there, go to Facebook, look up, obviously, Dirtfish, and press the like button. And you won't miss any of our little videos and stories and articles that we put on Facebook. So do that. And what I will try and do is put that video up. Well, I'll ask Elliot to do it because he knows how to do it, George.
He knows how to do that well. I mean, you know, I'm sure the guy's he's in business. I'm sure you can buy a car. You could probably buy a Mini there cheaper than anywhere else in the world. You just got to get yourself to Japan, find out where that is. Colin, don't give that away for free. In fact, keep that until I'm out the picture, and then negotiate the car and export it. Very easy to export cars from Japan. People do it all the time.
Yeah. They do it all the time. You're absolutely right. They absolutely do it all the time. What else did he have? So he took me around to the other side of his workshop, George, and he had a Lancia, a Delta Integrale, a yellow one up on the ramp. Oh, my goodness me. It was a heck of a place. There we are. Folks, thank you very much once again for listening. George, it's been a joy. It's been a joy. It's good to hear you're out the snow as well.
Absolutely, we were out playing in it yesterday, myself and my wife. Well, we didn't have snow, we just had ice, as I said, but it was lovely. We went for a walk in the forest up at Falls of Brewer.
Oh, lovely. Which is up the A9. We do like it up there. It's really very gorgeous.
There's a big sort of shopping place up there, right in the middle of the Highlands, and there's this gorgeous sort of shopping mall.
House of Brewer, it's called?
House of Brewer. Yes. But the Falls of Brewer behind it are spectacular, Colin.
They really are.
It's a lovely little gorge.
Listen, folks, we didn't really get as far through our discussion points as we'd hoped today, but what we would like to know is your thoughts on the M Sport lineup. What options do M Sport have for next year? Well, let us know in the comments section. Wherever you might be consuming this, there's always a comment section at the bottom of your podcast, your podcast provider. So let us know. Go to our Facebook page and let us know on Facebook what you think the M Sport options are for next year and just what might happen there. George, it's been a joy once again, mate. Looking forward to talking to you next week, George Donaldson. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you, Cole. Speak soon.
And we will speak soon. And folks, thank you very much again for joining us on Spin the Rally Pod.